The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Now, one of the reasons that I love Cool Stuff Inc. is because of their rewards program, which you become a member of just by making a purchase. After that, every purchase you make pushes you towards another level of the program, which means even more savings. Right now, I'm on level 6, which means I save 8% on all of my magic singles and 2% on booster boxes and board games. So head on over to CoolStuffInc.com and start saving money today. Everybody, welcome to episode one, number one of the Girlfriend Bracket. Can I just say, before we get started, how good it feels to be doing this with you all?
Woo!
Yes.
Man, I can't believe we're here. So before we get started with the introductions, I thought it would be a good idea if we explain the name of the show and how we came to name the show this, because there were a couple people who know what it means and were kind of like, why are you doing this? So we're going to go ahead and get all of that out of the way. So for those who don't know, the Girlfriend Bracket is a term that is used in Magic by some male players, hashtag not all men. And basically what it means is if a guy goes X and 3 or X and 4, he might say to his friends, oh great, now I'm in the Girlfriend Bracket. Which is a terrible phrase, and it means that only women are found at the back tables, and more specifically, it means that we are there because of our boyfriends or because of our partners. And we just thought it would be a really good idea to sort of reclaim that word and make the Girlfriend Bracket a really awesome place to be. So the next time somebody says, I'm in the Girlfriend Bracket, that's really nothing to be ashamed of. So you can come hang out in the Girlfriend Bracket with us and have a really fun time each week. So that was the reasoning behind that. And with that out of the way, let's go ahead and introduce ourselves for those who don't know. I'll go ahead and start. We can do alphabetical if you girls are fine with that.
Yeah.
All right. Sure. So I'm Erin Campbell. I'm 31 years old. I'm a podcaster and a corporate drone during the day from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I've been playing Magic since Ice Age. And my favorite decks are black, green, mid-range decks like Junk and Jund.
I'm Hallie Santo. I'm 25, originally from Long Island, but currently living in Seattle. And by day, I'm a freelance writer. I write for Gathering Magic. I write a column about tournament preparation that you can read there. And I also spend a lot of time taking care of my puppy, Kirby the Corgi, who you can see on my Twitter account. My favorite card is Venser Shaper Savant. I've been playing since about summer 2012, which was when I moved to Seattle. And my favorite decks to play are what you might call like disruptive beatdown decks or proactive control decks. So things like fairies when fairies was in standard or most Delver decks that you see in Legacy.
I'm Katie Neal. I live in Bozeman, Montana. By day, I am going to veterinary school starting in the fall, finishing up my undergrad. I'm 21, and I'm an L2 judge in Montana, one of three, so most of my weekends are spent driving faraway places to judge. I travel a lot more than most people I've ever met for Magic, and my car has a lot of Magic miles on it. My favorite decks are usually blue-white control decks. I was having a lot of fun with Rhino Pod before it got banned.
Oh.
That was really my first exploration into green-black X, so I might just go back to my blue-white style.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, I don't know about the meta right now, but we'll figure
it out.
Well,
you've got the new Narset now that she's blue and white.
As of this recording, we have a blue-white Planeswalker in standard.
It is my waifu I need to have four.
Her loyalty is absurd.
Yeah.
She starts at like 6 or something. She's a monster.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if Katie is all done, my name is Chris. I'm 32 years old. I'm from Kenosha, Wisconsin. I've been in and out of Magic for years, but I've been consistently playing since right after the Gatecrash pre-release. I love playing control decks, specifically blue-white, and five cards I've enjoyed playing thoroughly are Supreme Verdict, Sphinx's Revelation, Jace Architect of Thought, Codex Shredder. Shout out to Corey from Limited Magic for making that deck. And Reform, because fish and whales and krakens, oh my.
Oh, man. I remember the first time I played against Chris and I know each other from our local scene and also through my other show, and I played one of her friends at a local event, and he was playing a Whelming Wave deck. So it was nothing but Krakens and Leviathans and Whelming Wave, and it was the most tedious, frustrating deck I'd ever played against in my life. And Magic being such a small world, I didn't know that he knew her. Mm-hmm. So I think he went back to her and was like, yeah, I played this girl who was really upset to play against me. And then I had met her. I think I tweeted, like, this is the silliest deck I've ever played against, not knowing that we all knew each other.
Yeah.
And that was a fun little moment where I finally met him with Chris. And I'm like, oh, you're the Kraken guy. And he's like, oh, you're the girl who hated my deck. And I'm like, oh, and it was a lovely moment.
I didn't know the Kraken deck was a deck.
Yeah.
So that's new.
Yeah.
I didn't know there were that many Krakens.
Yeah. And that's the last thing you want to see when you're playing any sort of constellation deck, because you have to establish your board. Right. So you get your board already. You've got your Eidolons, you get your Coursers, and then Whelming Wave.
Whoops.
And suddenly they're all back in your hand again, and you have to reestablish. And there was another card, I can't remember what it was, but that also had a Scourge of Fleets, I think was it, where when it attacks or when it enters the battlefield, it bounces everything.
Oh, yeah.
So I would get all established, and I would look at his graveyard, and I'd be like, all right, there's two Whelming Waves in there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure you don't have any more. And then he would go, Scourge of Fleets? I was not a happy camper.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that card since whatever pre-release that was, so I had to, like, look up what it did just now.
Be glad you haven't.
Is it Kraken, Octopi, and what else?
Serpents and Leviathans, I think.
Yeah, Leviathans.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And people wonder why I tilt, you know?
Yeah.
All right, so enough about me. We have some wonderful topics that we're going to get into today, starting off with Modern. Now, Modern has been a hot topic since the Pro Tour. Just about every pro has written an article with their opinion on the matter, most notably Paulo Vitor Domenarosa, Gerard Fabiano did a little post about it, Ari Lax. It seems like people are feeling like Modern is stale, that there are... You know, there's not enough diversity in the format, that the silver bullets are a problem, that the answers are so specific where, you know, if you don't have the answer, you might as well not even bother showing up. You know, what do you all think about this? Like, do you think that they're right? I think, Hallie, you suggested Modern as a topic, right?
Yeah, okay. So I read PV's article, and I do agree with what he said about sideboarding. Just to paraphrase for those who haven't read the article, basically the point that PV makes in his article is that there are so many of these linear combo decks in the format that require very specific answers from opposing decks, and there just aren't enough sideboard slots for all of those different answers. And so what he suggested was either that Modern that the format change, that some bannings take place, or unbannings, rather. I think he suggested that Jace the Mind Sculptor be unbanned, along with a couple other things. Or that they switch to larger sideboards, say 20 cards or something like that. And I do agree with the sentiment that he has, just from the few experiences I've had playing Modern, that there are a lot of different combo decks that don't require the same cards to beat them. And there isn't a lot of overlap between the certain hate cards that you can put in your sideboard. But at the same time, like, I think you were just saying, Aaron, that people were saying that Modern isn't diverse enough. Mm-hmm. I think what Paulo Vitor Domenarosa is trying to say is that it's so diverse that you just can't answer everything, and it just turns into this metagame puzzle where you have to kind of predict what's going to be most popular and pack hate for that, and then risk getting blown out when some other deck is popular instead. So I don't really know what the solution is. Like, I mean, what do you guys think?
It seems to me like Modern is the most diverse, stale format.
yeah, that's a good term for it.
we keep seeing, you know, tons of different decks doing well, but none of those decks, you know, they're all good against one or two or three different decks, but not the whole field.
Right.
The reason why I played Blue, White, Red for so long was because for all the sideboard cards and all the cards you get in the main deck, you do really well against a large, large portion of the field, but you don't do super well against any of those. You have, like, maybe a 60% matchup against most of the decks you'll see, but you're not, like, 90% against any one deck. So it seems to me like, I don't know, I brought it up in my local game store about increasing the sideboard slots.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, one guy was like, well, that seems all good and stuff until, you know, you get the junk decks that get more slots. And that just seems horrible because those decks are already so good.
Right. Because so if, if you give more slots to one deck, you have to give them to everyone. And, you know, who's to say? Yeah, that seems really tricky.
Yeah, because some of the decks are already so good.
But isn't that sort of the point of Magic, though, is that you can't be prepared for everything and that, you know, your sideboard is supposed to be primarily for the matchups you aren't very good against. Like, I feel like certain people build their sideboards to cover everything, but there are matchups you're already strong against. And it was my impression that a sideboard was supposed to sort of plug the holes in the boat where, you know, when I'm playing Junk, for example, you know, or any sort of BG variant, I know that Burn is a terrible matchup for me. Whereas if I'm playing something like UWR Control, I know that that's a pretty decent matchup for me, so I don't have to go too overboard with those cards. And I feel like certain people just start preparing for every matchup where they're like, all right, Affinity is good right now, and this is good right now. Yeah, but how are you against it, though? Like, if you're already strong against these decks, you don't have to sideboard too much. You know what I mean?
Right. I think it does come down to deck choice at a certain point. Like PV was saying, there are a lot of decks that that can combo out on you really quickly, and so you need to have an answer for those combos. But then there are decks like, you know, Junk or Jund that just have all this hand disruption between Thoughtseize and Inquisition of Kozilek and Liliana, that those decks do seem to have quite an advantage, and playing a deck like that seems pretty solid.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just going to say that from, you know, just a cursory glance at Modern, because I really haven't played very much, Modern does seem to me like it's kind of a glass cannon that kind of shoots silver bullets, and so I can see what you're talking about with, like, the sideboard and, you know, needing, you know, specific card, but you're feeling like you have to plan for every deck manageable, but, I mean, how is that possible? I mean, I have that problem in Standard to be like, well, what's going to be at this tournament? You know, what do I need to have in my sideboard to beat such and such deck? And sometimes it feels like you don't have enough slots to prepare for that. Now, with Modern, there's a lot of really powerful cards, so maybe that isn't too much of a problem. It's hard for me to say just because I haven't really played as much. But that's just my casual observation.
See, I like the sideboard, or the way sideboarding works in Modern, because sideboarding is something I'm not very strong at. When I'm building a sideboard in Modern, I like that the choices are very obvious to me, where when I look at, you know, a list that did well at an event, and I look at the sideboard, and it's Modern, I know why the cards are there. Like, I'll see Fracturing Gust, and I'll be like, oh, Fracturing Gust, it's good against Bogles, it's good against, you know, Affinity, it's good against things like that, and I understand that. When I look at something like Standard, there are times where I will look at the sideboard and I don't know why cards are there. I tried playing Abzan midrange at regionals, and I was reading up on the matchups and the sideboard, and they were like, oh, for the mirror, bring in three Read the Bones. And I was like, why? Like, I just didn't understand. And then there was another one that was like, you're going to board out your murderous cuts. And I was like, but I got to kill the rhinos somehow. So why? It just didn't make sense to me. Like, you know, whereas with Modern, I could follow along and I could say Stony Silence, it's very obviously good against Affinity, and Timely Reinforcement's very good against Burn. And I just felt like for somebody like me, who's not the best sideboarder in the world, it was easier for me to follow along and to understand why those cards were there.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I think it should go on the record now that I am a huge hate fan of Boggles. I hate it with a supreme passion, and I think that just needs to be on the record, so.
Fair enough. I mean,
I
hate
Burn. It comes up, and I get angry. It happens. I can't contain it.
I'm sure we all have decks we don't like.
So Boggles, I was watching a friend play a win and in at the end of day one of a modern GP. So he was playing against Boggles, and he was playing white black Martyr of Sands life gain. Mm-hmm. That was the most boring match of Magic that I have ever witnessed. They were both, like, the life totals were like 60 to 70 at one point. It was absurd.
So kind of like a Soul Sisters situation?
Yeah, so it was basically, it was interesting. It was Martyr of Sands. He had brewed up this whole deck around using Viscopic Guildmage to perpetuate the life gain and, like, drain people. It was interesting. But he had, like, Lingering Souls and Squadron Hawks and Martyr of Sands and, like, Proclamation of Rebirth and Ranger of Eos and a lot of, like, the standard Soul Sisters stuff. Sarah Ascendant also. But he also had Zealous Persecution, which turned out to be really good against, like, other Lingering Souls decks, or, like, other, like, white weenie aggro decks. Watching him play against Boggles was incredibly stressful but incredibly boring at the same time.
It's interesting that we bring up the variety of Modern, because I feel like the variety has always been there, but I actually feel like it's gotten better, or some would say worse, now that Pod and Delver are gone. Like, those were really oppressive decks that kept out I hate to use the word jank, but it did keep out the more unusual decks. And I've noticed since those two decks got banned, if you do go on MTG Goldfish or you do look at the IQ results, you are seeing more of the colorful decks, like Lone Pox. And, you know, I was at the SCG Open this past weekend, and I was playing just the weirdest things. And those are things that I feel like had those two decks not been banned, we wouldn't see those as much. So on the one hand, it's really awesome that people can play Mind Crank with Duskmantle Guildmage.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I lost that one time. Don't worry.
Yeah. And then, but on the other hand, when you go to a major event, there is a little part of you that's like, you know, I didn't come for that. I didn't prepare for this. You know, I just got knocked out of contention because of this random deck that I didn't plan for. So, you know, depending on your perspective, it's either really great or really frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, the only problem that I had with Pod and Treasure Cruise getting banned was because a lot of people invested a lot of money in Delver and Pod, and once those cards were banned, those decks just kind of fell apart, you know? I think that's the biggest problem I have with Modern as a format, that cards from very expensive decks have been banned every year. Between Bloodbraid Elf and then Deathrite Shaman and now Pod, you know, these decks cost like $1,000+. And once those cards are banned, it's like, what do you do to pick up the pieces and go on again? Just invest another $1,000 in another deck? Like, that's the biggest problem that I think I have with Modern.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. As a general rule, I like Modern because I'm the type of person who, and again, this goes back to maybe my shortcoming, you know, like I mentioned with sideboarding, but I'm not the type of person who can just pick up a deck and play it. So the way Standard works is, you know, the decks fall out of favor so quickly, where it's like, you know, you'll pick up a deck and it might be good for like 2 or 3 months, but then suddenly it's not viable anymore, or it just gets outclassed, and then you're sort of forced to start over again. And, you know, I need time to learn the ins and outs of a deck. So I really appreciate a format like Modern where you can play a deck for a year straight, learn the ins and outs, and be in a format that rewards, you know, experience. So as a whole, I like Modern because with my learning style and with my play style, between sideboarding and picking up decks, Modern really suits me. So it really makes me sad when people say how terrible it is, because I didn't really feel like I knew what I was doing as a player until I started playing Modern.
Mm-hmm. So. My general view is I just try not to invest in decks that might not have overlaps with other decks. Mm-hmm. And so, like, with Blue, White, Red, you know, I already have Cryptics and the things that cost a lot, clicks or whatever. And then this last weekend I played Esper at our Modern FNM, that the list that did well in some Japanese tournament recently. It has like Monastery Mentors and Tassigers. It was pretty fun.
Ooh. Oh, I read about
I'm sold already.
Yeah, it was pretty spicy and it did well. So kudos to whoever made that list. I don't remember who did it.
Jerry Thompson posted that list in an article today, Hallie, if you're interested. It's on SCG.
Oh, sweet. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
It was super fun.
I think I could get behind.
Oh, no. The blue-white girls are like, yes!
Yes. Team up. Team Azorius.
So what do we think is the solution for Modern? Like, do we think it's just unbannings? Or, like, what's... I mean, I have to agree with you. It would be nice to see some unbannings for once, because it seems like banning is the default response.
Yeah. I mean, just to go back to what I was saying a few minutes ago, like, I think lowering the price point of a lot of cards via reprints in supplemental sets or even in regular sets during the year would really help a lot of people get into Modern. Because I was looking at the decks from GP Baltimore, and all I was seeing was like Snapcaster Mage up to $45, and Goyf is back over $200, and all of this, and I just wish that the format were more accessible to the average player.
Mm-hmm. I wish they would reprint Tarmogoyf in Standard. Not when Thoughtseize is in, but maybe in, like, when Thoughtseize rotates out, because I think that we have a lot of cards, you know, that answer it pretty well, and I think that would make it more accessible, and I don't think that it'd be super overpowered. Like, obviously, he's a good creature, but, you know, we have things currently, like Valorous Dance or whatever, that take care of him just fine. And so I don't think that, you know, I think Modern Masters 2 coming out, I doubt we'll see Tarmogoyf again since he was in the first Modern Masters, but I think it kind of did opposite of what they were trying to do, and it increased prices instead of making it more accessible. It made it more accessible to the point where Modern became really big, and then didn't make it more accessible past that. And so I think printing some of those cards in Standard at good times and not, you know, right now, would make the format a lot more accessible.
Yeah, I agree. So the next topic that was brought up, I think, Katie, you suggested this, was the PPTQ format.
Yes.
I think we're just starting to see they released a list of names of people who are qualifying for the first regional PTQs, and I happen to know quite a few people on that list. Are you unhappy with the system, or do you think it needs to – what do you think about it?
So Montana is rural. For us, you know, I guess we had four PPTQs fire in this last block. So we got to send four people to wherever the closest place is, 8 hours away.
8 hours?
Yeah. Well, wow. It's probably closer to seven.
Okay.
I think Salt Lake City is the closest to my town. And then up on the border of Montana in Missoula is closer to Seattle at like 9-ish hours.
Wow. Yeah, sounds about right.
Somewhere around there. So, I don't know, there's not a big draw. Nobody in Montana is very excited about it because, you know, the people that are going to travel for these tournaments to go to PPTQs are the people that would have traveled to PTQs anyway. And there's not a ton of hype about it. Like, they don't even give the first place person a playmat, which some people were like, oh, you know, well, that's cool. I got some packs and I get to go try again. But if I have bad luck at that one, then I'm kind of SOL.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And especially on the judge side of things, like, it puts a lot of strain, especially on our state, to try and organize these things and make sure that just the three of us are available on certain weekends so everybody can run their tournaments. You know, and then we're all competitive players, so not being able to play in them since there's not very many of us makes it a bit of a stress.
I was reading on Reddit how some PPTQs have even been canceled because they can't find a level 2 judge to run the event, and they're canceled at the last minute, and it's just bad.
Yeah. And Ellen, I guess, on Twitter said that they're going to try to fix that, but, you know, for us, we have a scheduling page on Facebook that all of the store owners in Montana are part of, and so they post in there, like, does this date work? And then one of us is like, yeah, I can do that. And so for us, that part hasn't been a big issue, but, like, our first PPTQ had 14 people.
That's
and
absurd.
So I had to drive 3 hours there and 3 hours back, and they had to compensate me somehow, but their level, you know, for paying me 6 hours plus 8 hours of work for only 14 people signing up is not conducive to making a ton of money for them. Like, you know, I think they basically broke even on it and maybe lost a little bit. But it's just not feasible to have us travel to go to these things that aren't drawing a lot of people.
It's interesting that they would release this format, this style of qualifying for tournaments. At the same time, they also tighten the restrictions for what makes a judge a judge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that just seems like really, you know what I'm saying? Where it's like they need at least a level two to run these, if I understand that. But then they make the requirements a little more stringent to be a level two.
Yes.
You'd think it would be the opposite, that they would make it so more could be level two so that more of these events could fire and then they'd be more successful. That's what I would think.
Yeah, that's what you'd think. Yeah, the process for being able to is definitely, I mean, depending on where you live, can be kind of hard. Like in Montana, people get a lot of experience because we have tournaments and there's not a lot of competition for those tournaments in terms of judges. But I've heard, you know, places like Seattle, one of the requirements is head judging tournaments and judging with other judges. And if it's more competitive to get into the judging scene in a big place like Seattle, where there's already a large population of judges, getting your requirements knocked out can be difficult, even with PPTQs being available now.
I can speak from the, I know my local game store owner had reached out to me because he knew that I was on social media. And from what he told me, the stores weren't even given a lot of direction in terms of how to run the events, where they were just sort of told, hey, this is a thing now, run these. They weren't given any sort of suggestions for what price support should be like, how many people they should plan for. And my local game store owner was very confused. He's just like, I don't know if I should plan for 15 or 50. I don't know if I should be, how high my prize support should be, how much my entry fees should be. You know, it just sounds like from the back end there wasn't a lot of thought put into this.
Yeah, yes. That's something that I've been hearing across the board also.
Now, Hallie, you've been on the grind for a while. Have you been to many PPTQs? Like, what has your experience been like?
I have. I've been going to one almost every weekend for the last month or so. So I've been to maybe half a dozen now. And it's been incredibly frustrating, actually. So I've played in about half a dozen of them. And like you were saying, like, the stores don't really know how much to offer for prize support. So I've seen these wide disparities between what stores are offering. Like, some of them are running them as 1Ks or 2Ks because they can afford to do that, and some other stores are just sort of giving away product that they have, like a Commander Arsenal or a From the Vault or something like that, that a lot of the grinders in my community don't really have much of a need for. So it's really strange. Like, I've made top 16 of four of them now, and I've walked away with almost nothing because prize payout has only been to top 8. And they're also pretty costly. Like, they've been about $20 for a constructed event or $40 for a limited event. And after a while, that sort of starts to add up. So for the average player, like, it may not necessarily be affordable to go to these every single weekend and keep grinding. And another thing, I guess another thing that's been frustrating is that it seems like there hasn't been a ton of communication between all of the stores in my area. I mean, that may be just specific to me because I live in Seattle, where there are tons and tons of game stores, just either in Seattle proper or in the surrounding area. But they've been sort of, they've been scheduling these PPTQs on top of each other. So on one day in April, I think it's like the first Saturday, there are four PPTQs all scheduled on the same day at the same time.
Wow.
I saw that.
Yeah,
I don't think they have judges for two of them.
Yeah, so, like, how can any of them have a decent player base if they're all going on at the same time, you know? It's really difficult to attract players to your store when you're not really communicating with other stores in the area and trying to plot things out so that you can all get players in. You know, it's, I don't know, I just feel like there seems to be a lot of planning that should go into this that isn't quite happening.
I noticed that when I was seeing stores have them during the week, Mm-hmm. We had a couple of stores that would have Monday PPTQs, Monday noon PPTQs. There was one that had one on Tuesday during the day. And at that point, it was whoever got the day off or who was just off to begin with. And I hate to say it, but I feel like that it was creating factors that you know, it wasn't about the skill. It wasn't about who practiced. It was you happened to have the day off today, and there were only 11 people there. And if I sound like I'm taking something away from the app, I'm sorry, but you know, I do wonder if that same person would have still done as well if they came in on a Saturday with 42 people, you know, and it wasn't some weird shift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
What Montana has started doing is some of our stores have been teaming up and they just do double headers.
Yeah.
So this last time we had the store from Missoula come to Bozeman, and they were on Sunday, and we did ours on Saturday. And then next time it'll be in Missoula, and Missoula will be on Saturday, and then Bozeman's will be on Sunday. But they'll both be in the same town, so people have to travel less, and hopefully to draw a bigger crowd, because you're right, having 11 or 14 people show up is not, you know, the stiffest of competition,
right.
Which, depending on who you are, might be good or bad.
Yeah. Well, it's like you play it out, and more than half of the people get into the top eight. Like, what's the point?
Yeah,
right. You cut to top eight after like two rounds. Like,
yeah,
the bottom three people won't be in the top eight. So,
and those bottom three people feel terrible.
Yeah.
I've heard some complaints about the fact that I think Caleb Durward brought this up in a post on Channel Fireball. He said something that having the PPTQs be in the store also sometimes creates an environment that isn't as competitive. And what he meant by that was that typically when you see a finals happening or a really important matchup, like a cut to something at a GP or a regular PTQ or an SCG, there's a feeling that there's something really serious going on. Like, you would never interrupt the people. You would spectate, but you would be respectful. And having it be in a casual environment, you know, they're not putting the tables separately. They're putting them in the middle, and people are fussing with you as you're in your matches. And he said that it really doesn't have the same ambiance as if you were at another event. And he said that that was sort of disconcerting to him, where he didn't feel like he was in a finals playing for something. Like, he just said people weren't really respectful of that. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely see that, especially if it's in, like, a smaller game store where there are still other customers milling around while you're trying to play a match. Like, that seems really distracting.
Yeah, we definitely have had, like, an issue with outside assistance, because it seems like people just view it as, like, another F&M. And so, you know, whether or not they're educated about, you know, competitive rules, or if they don't realize something is outside assistance, we've had a lot of people being like, hey, why didn't that creature die, instead of, you know, calling a judge, and just outside remarks. We had one in the finals of a 40-person PPTQ where the person's friend was, like, snapping at him, like, with his fingers, trying to see what was in his hand. And I was like, what are you doing? Don't do that. Like, he's playing the finals. You don't need to know what is in his hand right now. And so I think that has definitely been an issue, and I'm not really sure how to resolve that.
Right.
Yeah. My main issue with the PPTQs has just been the lack of variety when it comes to the formats. You know, I'm a modern girl, but from what I've seen, the PPTQs are overwhelmingly standard. I think Jeff Kugland threw together a spreadsheet, and it was like 80% standard.
Yeah, that sounds great.
And that's a lot. And I mean, even the sealed, the limited people, toss them a bone. You know, I'd be happy to see more limited events, or hell, even give the legacy people some of the chew on. But 80% standard, like, that seems a little much. And you know, Katie, you had mentioned that Helene was thinking of had said something like they were going to work on it. She said the same thing. She said, well, we're going to encourage, quotation marks in the air, encourage stores to have different formats, but they're not really enforcing that.
Right.
And standard does make them more money, and it's just, they're all standard, and I just don't, there's my motivation right there.
Yeah, I think we're having one modern tournament this entire season. The rest are, well, mostly standard. It's all standard, and then like two of them are sealed and one modern. It's not diverse at all.
Yeah, there's a few people that are just like die hard, I hate standard people. And so for them, even if they're grinders, you know, competitive and modern and legacy, they don't want to travel to go play a format that they hate, you know, that's hard to keep up with, hard to keep up with price-wise. And then these tournaments that cost a lot of money that aren't as fun for those people, like, I don't know, maybe they should require stores, you know, you can run four a year, one for every quarter, maybe, like, two of those four have to be different or something, like, they, you have to do two formats in a year or something.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'd be fine with that.
Because then everybody would have to do it, so it's not like everybody wouldn't be losing the same amount of money if your sealed turnout is less than your standard turnout.
I agree. So the next thing I wanted to talk about is a question that I've been asked a lot in my time podcasting, whether people come on my show and ask me this or I've been on other people's shows. Because I have been involved with social justice and you know, we are all women who play the game, people always ask me, hey, Erin, what do we need to do to get more women to play Magic? What needs to change? What do we need to have happen? And I know that I have my opinions on this, but I'm curious about you all. Like, what are your experiences? What do you think needs to change? Chris, you've been a little quiet. Why don't you start us off?
Okay. Well, for me, with Women in Magic, I've kind of approached myself getting more into Magic with a similar approach that I had when I became a funeral director. A funeral service is usually a very male-dominated industry.
Wait, you are a funeral director?
Yes.
Like 6 feet under?
Yep.
Wow.
So, really fun, really interesting. And male-dominated industry, and some women were perceived, I think, initially, like, can they really do this job? And I have encountered that, you know, someone dies at home, we go to the house, myself and another woman, we're going to take the body out. And they're like, well, who's going to come get the body? And it's like, well, what do you think we're here for? You know, we're very capable. We have muscles. We're going to take care of this. Don't worry about it. And so you kind of have to feel like you have to prove yourself to a degree. But I feel like, you know, with anything, it shouldn't be anything you can do, I can do better, like a la Annie, get your gun. It should be anything you can do, I can do equally. You know, we can do it just as good, I think, as any man can. I mean, it's playing Magic. It's not like, you know, we're doing like a strongman competition or something crazy. But I think something that would help women get more involved is I think that Wizards needs to do more advertising in Magic to foster future Magic players just in general. But I think they need to specifically target girls and younger women, because any young girl who's ever wanted to be a Disney princess, why wouldn't they be psyched to be a Lady Planeswalker? And there's so many of them. Wizards' parent company is Hasbro. Hasbro is a minority partner for the Discovery Kids channel, which used to be known as The Hub. And the network is rife with television shows that are used to help promote Hasbro products. Why couldn't some commercial time be devoted to help promote Magic, you know, at least for a younger set of, you know, girls. High school girls and up, to me, is a tricky situation because I feel that Magic is still very much perceived to be, quote, a boy hobby and a game for reclusive dorks, end quote. Changing that perception, I think, though, is a community issue. In order to exact change for that, I feel like local game stores need to be more involved, maybe organize events that would appeal specifically to women, like whether or not they did a ladies' night draft or something. You know, some colleges have clubs that help promote Magic on campus, but most women I have personally met who actively play Magic are active in maybe other dorkly pursuits, which is why they ended up in a game or comic shop in the first place. But those places can be intimidating or perhaps unappetizing for women who may want to get into the game, but maybe they aren't into traditionally dorky things. And a lot of non-gamer women have asked me why I play, you know, what I get out of it, if there's gambling involved. They ask questions about how the game is played, you know, what it's all about. And I feel that some women are thrown when I start talking about it, because during the discussion, based on our description of the game, it sounds like we're 2 seconds away from playing like a D&D campaign. And that might frighten them a little bit. But I think to help promote women in Magic in like high school or beyond, we have to highlight the things about Magic that we enjoy, maybe on a more subconscious level, that it helps enhance your critical thinking skills. It involves intuitive gameplay. You know, for some people like myself, it can help improve your math skills, which has always been something very not so good for me. You have a reason to socialize on a weekly or monthly basis with other people. Maybe you just moved to a new place and you don't know anyone. There was a girl who came into our old LGS. She had just moved here from Florida. She didn't know anybody, and she walked down to the game store and just said, I know how to play Magic. I'm here to hang out. And I give her a lot of credit because I don't know that I would have, you know, done that. But I feel that, you know, socializing is definitely a thing then. Networking, you know, you can get to know a lot of different people, and maybe they have a similar professional background like you do, or, you know, you need to get a job, or you want to get more active in like social networking or other things. You know, that's a way to get into that. You can facilitate working as a team. You know, if you're practicing to go to a big tournament, you're all going to play the same deck. You learn how to work in a group. And you can help build your leadership skills by being a judge or, you know, a TO or something like that. And Magic kind of opens the door to that.
Yeah. The two things I kind of worry about, though, that you mentioned, Chris, was the ladies' night and the advertising, because I've seen the advertising, and it usually feels like a fail because they feel like it needs to be pink. They feel like they need to, you know what I mean? Like, I remember I went to Target one time, and I was in the toy section because I like to play card games with friends, like Phase 10 and Uno and Skippo and things like that. And we were going through the toy aisle, and we were in the Nerf section, like the Nerf guns. And there were the run-of-the-mill Nerf guns, you know, which we're used to. But then there was the Rebel Nerf. R-E-B-E-L-L-E, and it was like pink and metallic, and you know, the normal Nerf guns were sold like, you know, go, you know, conquer your friends and go do stuff like that, and the Rebel marketing was much softer, and it was like, you know, make friends with your girlfriends while you shoot soft pink dice at each other, and, you know, the problem is when you tell somebody or when you tell a company to advertise to girls or women, it does feel dumbed down almost, or it does feel like they fall back on pink and flowers and dolphins, and Lord knows I love some of those things too, but, you know, there's a weird way that they feel like they target women, and it just feels a little narrow.
Yeah. Oh yeah, like the lady tool kits you see at Lowe's, and they're like pink or purple or something. It's like, why has it got to be all that? Why can't it just be a tool kit? I'm just going to use it to hammer something in the wall.
Yeah. The other thing I'm concerned about is the ladies' night. I don't know if I told you this, but my local game store had tried a ladies' night, and it went so badly.
What happened?
Well, what happened was, so my local game store decided they were going to have F&M be free for ladies. So normally there was a $6 entry fee. You got a pack just for signing up. And then depending on how you finished, you could win more packs. And the prize support was really, really good. But they decided that they were going to try to get more women to play. And so they waived the entry fee. So you didn't have to pay the $6. You essentially got to play for free. And you would get your free pack for signing up or whatever. And admittedly, there weren't many women who turned out for this. I think it was me and like two other girls. And the guys were fine with it when we weren't good. So when we weren't doing well and we were going 2-2, because there were only four rounds at the time, they didn't have anything to say about that. But once we started getting good, and specifically when I started getting good, and I'm winning 8, 9, 10 packs a night, then it became a problem. And I've noticed that where some guys, they have no problem with you playing if you're the stupid girl, if you're the poor, you know, the poor player girl, if you don't know what you're doing, you're not really a threat to them. But once you start going after their pro points and their monies and their packs, then there's a problem. Essentially, and I remember this was right around the time that Thragcusk and them were about to rotate. So whatever standard format that was, Innistrad Block was going to rotate. Yeah. And I took a break from the game because I was sick of Thragcusk and Snapcaster and all that stuff. And when I came back, when I think that was Return, what was the next? That was when Theros came out, I believe.
Yeah.
I went back to the local game store and I was like, so I'm here for ladies' night. And the LGS owner says, Aaron, we canceled that because people complained. And more specifically, because dudes complained, because it came down to, well, why is she winning 10 packs, but she didn't have to pay an entry fee? And what those guys didn't understand was that was a competitive LGS. It wasn't like I was playing against Mono Red all the time. I was having to work for those packs. And it was very insulting to me that people thought that I didn't deserve those simply because I didn't pay an entry fee. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, when you mentioned having a lady-specific event, I do worry that guys would play that card again of, oh, you know, why can't – it would just get spun somehow into a not-so-positive thing.
I feel like everything regarding women in Magic gets spun into a not-so-positive thing.
Agreed.
Which is the main problem.
I remember a friend of mine, he sent me a flyer the other day on Twitter to a store called The Man Cave. I don't know if you saw that.
Yes.
And it wasn't that dreadful. it was
pretty cringe-worthy. Was that the one with misspelling on it?
No, I don't think so. It was basically a flyer where it had this woman in a red bandage dress, and of course only I would know that, and she had flowing brown hair, and it was like, come to Sexy Tuesday Magic. And I was like, what is sex and magic? I mean, I'm very sexual, but even I can't really correlate the two. And so I went on their website and I started researching the store, and it was so just primitive, where it was like, we wanted to create a space for men.
Well, men already have spaces. What about creating a space for women?
Exactly. And then they said that they were serving food, and specifically on the blog post it said, we're serving man food. Well, like pork rinds? Like, what
do you eat? Can't I eat that too? My stomach digests stuff.
Right? Like, is there a specific enzyme? Like, can we not?
Yeah, the womanzyme.
Right, the womanzyme. That's perfect. But yeah, it's funny. When people ask me what I feel like needs to change, I really do feel like it's little things. I don't think it's anything. I think people are expecting to hear these big sweeping suggestions. And I do feel like it starts at the local game store, and I do feel like it's very small. Clean bathrooms. That's such a harmless thing, but you'd be surprised how many stores just can't keep up with that, where the bathroom does look like something out of Saw. And you're like, what? Like, what is this? And are you in the Ladies of MTG Facebook group, any of you?
No, I'm not.
Okay. There's a Facebook group that's a secret group, if you will. And every once in a while, just to show you how rare it is that we find a clean bathroom, somebody will post a picture and we'll marvel. And we'll be like, look at how shiny the faucet was, and look at that hand dryer. It's perfection. And every once in a while, you have to look at that and you're like, wait a minute. We should be gushing over spoilers right now, and instead we're gushing over the faucets?
Yeah.
Like, and that shows you.
And that's something that men enjoy, too. Like, I don't think I've met a guy who's like, I'd rather go pee in a dirty bathroom than in a clean one. Like, that's just something everybody likes.
Yeah. You would think. And another thing is the play mats. You know, sometimes you see these table mats and they're like women with skull pasties and women with, you know, just a couple a thing of mistletoe by their, you know, bits and things like that. And I think that's something that, again, could appeal to, you've got children in your store, don't have that on your table. Like, that's not something that's unique to women. That's, you know, maybe some guys don't want to see that either. I think that's another thing as well. I don't think there's anything really specific to women. I think it's just little thing, common courtesy things.
Yeah. And I think, speaking of children and, you know, speaking of, like, little things that we can do, I think going back to what Chris was saying about sort of, like, the stigma of nerd culture that women don't necessarily want to be a part of, I think if more people just took the time to teach their daughters how to play Magic, that would probably not be as much of an issue. Like, a lot of those sort of cultural ideas are generational, and I think if more people took the time to tell their daughters that, like, you know, your brother plays Magic and you can play it too. Not like, oh, your brother gets the Magic cards and you get the My Little Pony cards. Like, it's just like little things like that that can definitely make the world a better place for, you know, women who enjoy these kinds of things.
Katie, you being a level 2 judge, you know, I know that sometimes we, you know, people do. I think there's the misconception that the events are the problem. Like, you will hear people say, I was intimidated to go to an event, or I didn't feel safe at an event, or you hear things like that. You know, being a level 2 judge, you know, do you feel that that's accurate? Like, do you feel that the events are safe spaces, or that they are good places to be? Or do you think that there's work that needs to be done there?
I think there's definitely a lot of work that needs to be done. And it comes down, it's kind of weird. So, like, I judged GP Denver in the beginning of January, and there was a guy wearing a shirt that said, I wear this shirt to distract women while I stare at their chest. Or something, like, weird like that. And, like, 4 male judges approached me, and they're like, what do you are you insulted by this shirt? Like, what do you think about this shirt? And I was like, what do you guys think about the shirt? Like, just because I'm a female doesn't mean that you should have to come get me and get my disapproval over something that's going on. Like, I feel like a lot of that is put onto the female judges to handle, and I don't think that's right. And so when you get into, you know, women playing in tournaments, I've head judged tournaments where people have been sexist towards me. Like, just a few weeks ago, I had a guy that was like, "Oh, you don't want to start with me, little girl." And I was like, I don't think you want to start with me right now. Like, this is, you know, calling me little girl when I'm head judging a tournament seems pretty counterintuitive to, to me, but this guy obviously didn't think so. And so I think there is, you know, even when I'm in a position of authority, there's still a lot of people that have an issue with that. And, you know, just playing in a tournament, I think even more people have an issue with that. You know, some people accept, yeah, there's female judges, but when there's female players, it's like, oh my God, look at that shiny gem. Like, you know, and whether or not that's good or bad, it, you know, happens both ways. But I think the general stigma of women in competitive events is not positive yet.
For a while, you know, I used to put a lot of the onus on Wizards, where, you know, I would sort of look up at the sky and I would say, "Wizards, do something." And, you know, over the last 6 months to a year, I've been able to travel across the country and I've been able to visit so many local game stores. And I've been very lucky in that all of the ones I visited have been fantastic. Coliseum Games, Games and Stuff, the game store I visited in Omaha was wonderful. But I do feel like it is more of a local game store issue, where I feel like those habits and that environment, people get used to that, or they get an idea of what that is from the local game store. And I feel like if they have good experiences at the local game store, that's going to sort of be the gateway that's going to make them want to go to something bigger, like an Open or a GP. But if they have like a negative interaction there, it just stops, where they're soured, they're not going to try anymore. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely.
I think the local game store is the biggest issue. Like, I think there are problems at GPs and stuff, but it's the general feeling just when playing Magic casually with your friends, where, like, issues can be resolved easily. So in our store, I would say all of our competitive players are, like, pretty good friends. We hang out outside of Magic. And about a year ago, I had gone downstairs to go to the bathroom, and when I came back up, somebody had written my life total notebook, excuse my language for any young ears, "I wish you would stop guzzling cum for a living."
And, whoa.
And so I was like, I basically stood up and I was like, "Who did this?" And obviously everybody just kind of looked at me with that like frightened deer in the headlights look. And I posted it on Facebook and I made it public. And I basically had all of the support of the community behind me saying, "No, this isn't okay." And I never found out who did that, but nothing like that has ever happened again. And so I think making issues like that known for people who are like, "No, women aren't, you know, people aren't mean to them in Magic. Like, that's not an issue we have." Making issues known, but not blowing them out of proportion, is really important. And being able to have the support of the community behind you is a really big thing. Because I think, you know, if everybody was like, "Oh, that's not a problem," in my case, I would have been like, "Oh, well, I'm quitting Magic. Like, this is not fun. I don't want to be here." And I thought about quitting anyway, because I was like, why am I playing this game if nobody wants me there? Or that's what it felt like at the time. But... you know, people commented and they were like, "We do want you there. This is horrible." And just being shown that, and that's not okay, I think is a good reminder to the people who are trying to perpetuate the anti-women Magic movement that it's not okay what they're doing.
And that's why I think visibility is so important. It's like, you know, I was in the Lady Planeswalkers Facebook group the other day, and there was a gentleman there, and he'd made a comment about the fact that he joined the group by accident, or he said something to the effect of, I don't live in Washington, I'm not near a Lady Planeswalkers, should I even be in this group? And I think, Hallie, you saw it, we were overwhelmingly like, yes, like,
yeah,
you know,
why
you
not?
Should be part of the group. And, you know, I think it's important where, especially if you don't have anybody near you to support you and things like that, you can at least say that somewhere there are people out there who support you. And I'd like to think that we're doing that with Twitter and Facebook and hopefully with the show,
yeah.
You know, that people can say there are good gamesters out there and there are other women who are going through that and have powered through that. And that's what this is all about. And I definitely think that if you're not getting that at home, you know, there are resources out there that where you can get support from and get strength from, and hopefully that will get you through it.
Yeah.
And I overheard one girl at a tournament a few weeks ago, and I was telling some story about, you know, like, this is why women don't really play Magic, you know, I've had this experience or whatever, and some girl was listening, and she was like, that's why I would never go to a tournament, and I was like, no, like, yeah, I guess this does happen, so I'm not really selling you on the tournament thing right now. Like, and I didn't really know how to approach it, because I was like, well, you know, I play and I still have fun. You should too, but you just heard like some horrible story that makes the game not sound fun, and now I don't know how to convince you to come back sometime.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of an issue that I hadn't really run across before.
I try really hard to balance the good with the bad, where, you know, I do call out the issues where I see them, but I also do try to plug the game stores that are doing a really good job. Like, when I visited Chris for the PPTQ, I told the owners, like, you have a really good store here, please keep it up. I had tweeted that I had a really good time at their store, because I do want people to see that we're not just ragging all day long. You know, there are good places out there, and those places do deserve the same level of attention. Because it is really easy to just get bogged down in the negative, but, you know, we do also need to put it out there when we see people doing good work that they get some of that spotlight too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I also had another theory, and I don't know if you guys agree with me on this, but I'll throw it out there. Do you also feel like the reason why more women aren't competitive is because the qualities that make somebody competitive are considered to be less endearing in women as they are in men?
I'm not sure about that, though. I have had a couple experiences that would indicate that. Like you said, I belong to the Lady Planeswalker Society here in Seattle. I'm very active here in the original chapter, and I have played against certain women who have said, like, sort of off the record or after the match, like, oh, I didn't take this line because I thought it would be mean if I did that. And I was just sort of like, what are you talking about being mean? Like, you're trying to win the game. Like, you wouldn't be playing this game if you weren't trying to win, right? And she was like, well, you know, this is fun. Like, I'm just trying to, you know, be part of this fun environment. And I don't know, like, it sounded weird to me, because that's just never a thought that I had playing the game, you know? Like, I just thought, like, okay, so the object of the game is to reduce my opponent's life total from 20 to 0, so I'm going to do that as quickly and efficiently as possible. Like, that's what you do when you play Magic. And I just never really thought to do anything otherwise, but I guess there are people out there who feel that way.
Well, except for Chris. She helped her opponent win at regionals.
What? How did you do that?
He didn't really know how to pilot his Jeskai Tokens deck very well, and I'm playing against him, like, what in the hell is he doing? And I'm like, well, maybe do it this way, or no, you don't want to do that. And he was very appreciative, and afterwards he's like, you know, I'm just not very good at Magic. And I was like, well, do you just have a hard time remembering what some of the cards do, or this, that? He's like, I'm just kind of dumb. And I'm like, no, it's not that. Just gotta, you know, just kind of remember what some of the cards do. I mean, he wrecked me with Sarkhan. I mean, if that means anything, I was just like, wow, I can't believe I got lit up like this. But, you know, I don't feel necessarily bad about helping him, but, you know, at that point I was kind of not really doing well anyway, and I was like, oh heck, I'll just be a good
I'm just gonna help him beat me.
But it was okay. In other circumstances, you know, I wouldn't have done that. He was a nice guy. He wasn't, you know, with the stern face and like, I'm just here to wreck you type of situation. He was, you know, very pleasant to deal with and a nice person, but because those are the people I don't like to play in competitive events. Like, I understand being serious, like I'm serious when I play, but the ones that won't even look at you and it's like, hi, you know, sitting down and they're just like shuffling cards very fast, avoid eye contact. It's like, okay, it's like that now. All right. Well, you know, we're all here to play, I guess, but then that can be, I guess, an intimidating situation going back to women playing in tournaments, that some people may be very put off by that situation, to be like, is he acting this way toward me because I'm a girl? Is he acting this way toward me because he's just in the zone? Is this something I should be concerned about? Because it was a concern of mine when I first started playing. Then I eventually was just like, nope, he's just doing his thing. It's fine. It's not a big deal.
I was actually leaning more towards what Hallie suggested, where, you know, women do feel like they have to pull the punch because I don't want to be seen as mean. I don't want to be seen as overly aggressive. You know, I have to be the nice girl, you know, and, you know, qualities like that in guys are considered to be a benefit, where, oh, he's a terror, he's a beast, he's going to chew you up, raw. But yet if a woman does it, you know, it's aggressive, it's uncouth, you know, that's what I was kind of going for. And I feel like, you know, let's say, for example, in between rounds, where let's say Sam Black is at an event and Sam Black wants quiet time and he's not sitting by anybody and he's sitting by himself at a table. I think if it was him, it's, you know, oh, he's focused, he's centered, he's calm, he's collecting himself. I feel like if Feline Longmore were to do that, or Hallie were to do that, is, oh, she's distant, she's frigid, she's... And that's what I'm saying. I feel like the traits in men are admirable. It makes them better competitors. But when women do it, it's negative.
That totally does happen to me, by the way.
Yeah.
There was one time when I was just sort of trying to change up my tournament routine because I was in a little bit of a slump. So I brought my headphones and I was just like listening to music and walking around the tournament center. And one of my friends came up to me and was like, hey, are you doing okay? I was like, yeah, I'm fine. What's up? And he was like, well, you've been really quiet. And I was like, I'm just trying something different. And yeah, I feel like people do think that if a woman is standoffish, it's weird. But if a man is standoffish, it's just like, oh, that's just how he is. You know, it's more acceptable. And I don't think it should be that way.
Yeah. I also feel like we see that with our pros, too, where, you know, there are certain male pros whose names I will not mention, but, you know, they are a little caustic or maybe a little aggressive, and, you know, not as much of a fuss is made out of that. But I feel like if Jackie Lee were to do something, if Melissa were to do something, you know, there's more of a backlash there, where I remember there were some allegations of possibly cheating on Jackie's end, where somebody, there were, I don't remember the specifics of it, but, you know, I feel like the situations where guys were involved with that, it was rationalized away a lot faster, where it was, oh, he didn't mean it, it was just a slip, he's a good guy. Whereas in Jackie's case, people were ready to throw the book at her, and she didn't get nearly as much leeway as she did when the same accusations were leveled against guys. And same with personality. You know, certain guys can be difficult, and it makes them charming in a way, but we have to be friendly. We have to be the nice girl. We can't be the bitch, you know? And I do feel like the double standards might keep women out of competitive play, too.
I was playing a PTQ where a judge was watching our match, and the guy kept saying something like, sorry, I'm playing slow. I've just been lost in your eyes. And I was like, what? Play faster. And he was like, you're just rushing through this match because you don't want to be talking to me. And I was like, no, I just want you to play at a reasonable pace so I can beat you and go on to my next round and, like, play magic. And I think that, you know, it is something where he thought I was being rude because I was like, can you just play a little faster? Like, because I didn't want to be playing him is what he thought. But I was just like, I'm just trying to play by the rules. And every time I ask you to play faster, you're thinking I'm slighting you. And no, I don't want to date you. Like, I don't know how to nicely say that without it affecting our match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and see, and I get the feeling that had you been a male player, it would be, you know, oh, he's just asserting himself. He's just, you know, aligning his board state. He's just trying to move things along. But because you did it, you know, you were mean, you were unfriendly, you were being a jerk, and that's the thing.
Yeah.
And I could be wrong, but, so.
I would definitely agree with that. I've been called a bitch multiple times because I'm just trying to play the game and, you know, I don't think men get called bitches very often when they're just trying to play the game, so.
Yeah, yeah. There was also a comment that I read, I think it was on Reddit, where somebody said, we're at a point now where it's not about getting more women to play, it's about improving the environment we already have for women. Do you guys agree with that?
I do. I think that, you know, while I do think that they do need to focus on getting future players, I do think that, you know, if they can improve what's going on right now, maybe more people would want to go to a higher level tournament. Maybe they just go to an FNM, but they're intimidated because of things they've heard or seen or something. And, you know, it's never going to get any better if you never try with what you have.
Well, I think the theory was that, you know, so let's say we do manage to bring in all these new players, but we're bringing them into an already not so good environment, then what good is that doing?
Yeah.
I think it's definitely a bit of both. Like, we want to be bringing in more people while we're improving, I think. Because if we're not bringing in anybody new, but we're improving, then everybody's having fun, but there's not, you know, new women being seen in Magic, and so I think it's a give and take.
I think visibility is so important, too. You know, I always tell people that I would never expect a woman to do something she's not comfortable with, but at the same time, it is so important to see another woman across the room and know that you're not the only one. And, you know, with the Pro Tour that happened recently, it was so frustrating that we didn't see any women. And I can understand if they didn't have the numbers to warrant a feature match, but there were none. There were no technical crew. There were no judges. There was no female presence at that Pro Tour.
There were two women in the entire Pro Tour.
Oh, I know, but I mean, like, in front of the camera, like, we saw nothing.
I mean,
normally we see Kim Warren doing laps with her iPad, and God bless her, but, you know, I do feel like it would have mattered so much more if we just saw someone, right. And I do think visibility is super, super important.
Yeah. And I've heard the theory, like, well, if we put a female on camera, then, you know, all the comments will be negative. What do you guys think about that? Because I've been a table judge on camera at multiple events, and there are comments that are negative, but usually I just don't read them, and then I have get to avoid that. But you know, do you think that that's inviting a hostile environment?
I mean, I'm a writer, so my mantra is don't read the comments, so I don't know. I mean, I think it would mean a lot more to women to see women on camera than it necessarily would to have, like, a handful of hateful comments in the Twitch feed.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's also, they did it for this Pro Tour, didn't they? Where they either disabled the chat or they started a heavily moderated chat.
Yeah.
I mean, there's ways around that. I mean, it's pretty common knowledge that Twitch is going to be terrible. Mm-hmm. When I was at the Community Cup, I didn't dare look at Twitch. Like Trick Jarrett was watching the stream as it was happening, and I could have easily looked over his shoulder. I just didn't go there. I knew better than to go there. But that didn't stop me from playing in the event because it was huge that I was on camera, that I was thinking that that would help somebody or it would make an impact, which I hope that it did. And, you know, there's ways around that. I think Star City for a while just completely did away with the Twitch chat. They didn't even have it. Mm-hmm. So if that's the excuse, then just get rid of it. So is there anything else that we would like to get off our collective chests before we wrap up our first episode?
You said you had a judge story for me.
I did. I was at SCG Baltimore this weekend, and oh my goodness. Okay, so I was playing against Abzan mid-range. I was on Lone Pox, game 3. My opponent goes down to 5 cards. He took a mulligan. And turn 3, he plays Liliana, and I see the card go from his hand to the board. Nothing looks suspicious. It looks like business as usual. He takes a couple of seconds, so he puts the dice down. He's like, oh, he can't decide if he wants to go up or down. And then he decides he wants me to sacrifice a creature. So I sacrifice one of my Lingering Souls tokens. And then I see him pull a Siege Rhino out from underneath Liliana, and he goes, whoops, I was stuck to Liliana. And I was like, judge!
What?
Where did he put it?
He proceeded to try to put it back into his hand. So I call the judge over, and the judge takes us separately to ask us what happened. And I said, you know, he claims that his siege rhino was stuck to Liliana, and that he just slid it out from underneath her and proceeded to try to put it back in his hand. So a second judge gets called over, and after the one judge interviews us both, second judge comes over and halts the game. So he sits in one of our chairs to pause the match, if you will. The first judge goes, well, we're going to ask a spectator or two what they saw. Okay. Oh, it gets better. And as luck would have it, the spectator is his friend.
Of course
it is. Who
was
standing behind him. So the judge takes the guy by the arm and says, can I have a word with you? I say to him, that's his friend.
That's why you don't talk to spectators.
So the judge puts up his hand, like, I've got this, talks to the friend, doesn't talk to anybody else. There were people to our left and to our right that he could have, maybe he wanted a friend and a non-friend. You know, that's what I thought he would have done. So after the judge talks to his friend, the judge comes back over, and he goes, well, I've conducted an investigation, and I determined that there's nothing wrong here, so game can proceed as normal.
Did he, like, count your guys' cards? Like, ask if he mulliganed and then count how many cards were in his hand and stuff?
He asked me if he mulliganed, but I don't remember if he counted cards or not. He may have. But I was just thrown by the fact that the one person he asked is clearly dude's friend. And, you know, I was like, of course he's going to say that. It's his friend. And I was just like, I don't feel this is very impartial. I'm not really a fan of this. And then sure enough, turn four, he plays the Siege Rhino. And I'm just like, well, that's interesting. And I just felt that, you know, maybe it's just me, but I just felt that it was very biased the way it was handled.
Yeah, sounds like it. Did you appeal?
I did not. And I did speak to Ricky, because Ricky Hayashi was head judging after the fact, and I let him know that I felt that judge could have done a better job or what I felt should have happened, and Ricky said he was going to speak with him. And I don't know if anything came of it, but, you know, how do you think that should have been handled? Like, am I wrong for feeling like it was biased?
No. Usually, I mean, as a judge, you're taught, like, never take spectator stuff into consideration because, you know, unless you're dealing with, like, bribery and, like, what did you hear, something like that. But for that very reason, like, you don't want their friend, you know, you don't want them helping each other. Like, that's just not creating a good environment. And so, like, I think he should have counted all the cards, because if it's only turn three, it's not very difficult to deduce how many cards he's drawn for his turns and how many he should have in his hand and who was on the play and the draw. And yeah, I feel like that was handled really poorly. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. That's okay. I just figured it would be. As it was happening, though, I was half angry that it was happening and half excited I had a really cool story for the podcast. I was, like, taking notes. I was like, be sure and tell Katie about this.
So make nice sure to appeal. Ricky can move mountains, so might as well make him put those muscles to use.
Right? lesson learned. So why don't we let people know where they can find us and how they can get a hold of us if they'd like to speak with us or know more about us.
Okay. My email is katie.neal, N-E-A-L, 14 at Gmail.
Okay.
If somebody wants to get in contact with me.
Okay. And you're on Twitter?
I am on Twitter. I don't know what my handle is. It's like Katie _N14 or something. Katie _N14.
There we go.
Got it.
So I'm on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. And you can read my articles at GatheringMagic.com.
Okay. And my Twitter handle is Tehkriz, Tehkriz. My email is Yotehkriz at gmail.com, Yotehkriz. And I also have a Tumblr, which the username is also Tehkriz.
Okay. And I am Original Estrus on Twitter. You can email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. And you can find the show on Gathering Magic starting this Monday. Hopefully we will have an RSS feed set up and everything. So if you have enjoyed this first episode of The Girlfriend Bracket, you can subscribe to the show and leave us a review and some stars. And other than that, this has been a lot of fun. I'm really glad that we're doing this. And I look forward to recording with you all next week.
Will we be taking questions?
We can take questions. If anybody's listening and you'd like to ask us a question, you can email one of us or you can send us the question on Twitter. I think that could be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a Twitter account.
We do have a Twitter account. We are at the girlfriend bracket. So that's at the GF, at THEGF bracket. So you can also get a hold of us there. And I think that's about it. So thank you all so much for listening. And be sure and tune in next week. Bye.